Freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
But I want to get the language right.
The big government is in trouble.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of me?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
Take a deep breath, Sunburnies. We're going to get to you. The calls have already started coming in for the show. My name is S.M. Gibson, and this is Anti-Media Radio, September the 24th, 2015. A few stats that we'd like to go over at the beginning of every episode that the corporate media somehow neglects in their 24-hour broadcast. 875 Americans have been killed by police officers so far this year. 95 officers have died in the line of duty. 27 of those have come by gunfire. 25 of those by automobile accident. 16 of those by heart attack. One of those even coming by plane crash. So that's 875 to 95. Also in the city of Chicago with... They're very strict gun laws. We have seen 2,227 people shot so far this year and 380 homicides. America's great and wonderful ally, Saudi Arabia, has seen already over 132 executions this year, the majority of which are by beheading. And for those of you who don't know, that they are getting ready to crucify, literally crucify, a young man who is an activist, among many other things. Also, the great allies of Saudi Arabia have been responsible for what's going on in Yemen right now. There's a Saudi-led coalition. For those who don't know, there is a war going on in Yemen. So far, since just March, 5,412 civilians have been killed in Yemen. 1,600 of those were children under the age of 14, and 1,260 of those were women. As always, we are joined here in the studio with our wonderful producer, Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, how are things this evening?
Absolutely wonderful, Mr. Gibson. Watching this Republican race heat up, going over the numbers a moment ago, and really it depends on which place you get your news from. It really depends on who. And we all know Trump's leading in the polls on the Republican side, as crazy as that still sounds.
It's
to
still,
me,
just yeah,
for
that's
me
to bonkers.
Form those words in my mouth and utter them is just still revolting to me. But Trump is definitely the front runner, but as far as who's second, third, and fourth, it really depends on which place you're getting your news from, and also to how much of a stake that they, Fox News, have in the outcome of that.
Speaking
that
of Saudi Arabia, but
we'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah,
but yeah, it's funny you mention the Republican race right now. There is a story that it happened back in June. Ted Cruz has a super PAC, which is raising money on his behalf to become President of the United States.
Keep the Promise One is the name of it.
Yeah, he has four super PACs, and they've all got a name that has to do with Keep the Promise or something like that. But this one is called Keep the Promise One. Back on June the 18th, Keep the Promise One made a donation of $500,000, $500,000, to Carly Fiorina to become President of the United States. Now, this is according to the Federal Election Committee. This is the FEC, like, or commission. We have no idea why. We don't know what. Like, there's no answers, but that's a huge head scratcher. And you have to remember, this is back in June before, you know, really anybody was talking about her.
And let's go back to this one very important fact, that this is a super PAC that was set up and designated for Ted Cruz.
Yes, to raise money for Ted Cruz so Ted Cruz could go and become president. And they're donating money to Carly Fiorina.
And also take notice of that date, June 18th. I mean, Carly Fiorina
barely in the race.
The hearts and minds of anybody. Nobody knows who she was except for the fact that she was a failed executive at HP. Well, you know. Yeah, more of the same. We've got a couple more of them going to jump into the chocolate river and swim on down, and the Oopaloopas are going to come out and sing and join hands. And, you know, Ben Carson is showing a lot stronger. I'm actually shocked to see he is a pretty solid second in most of the polls that I saw.
Not all, but yeah.
Didn't get a chance to check all the polls on the internet, but some of the leading polls, Bloomberg, are great.
But we know what polls are worth. They're not worth, you know, Really much of anything.
Yeah, especially this early in the race. But it is funny to see that when we have one person climbs in the polls, then suddenly we have a new story about them. Like this Carly Fiorina thing's been going on since June. This happened back in June.
Yeah,
we're talking about it because if you look at most of the polls, she's somewhere between third and fifth, depending on which poll you see.
Well, there was brief mention of this by a couple of new different organizations back in July, and nobody cared. It just, you know, kind of people went.
But
went,
I mean,
the way.
This is the puppet show. The puppetry going on right now. We have a candidate that's climbing the polls that nobody's ever heard of before, suddenly is making the news and is actually, coming up with some, coming up with some new ideas or whatever you think she's doing. Personally, I'm not a fan.
No, well.
A lot of, about 800 obvious reasons.
Ric Flair, 2016.
Man.
Woo.
This country would be so great.
It would. Limousine riding. Rolex wearing. That's what we need. Also, later on in the broadcast, we will be joined by Justin King, who we were talking to at the beginning of the week on Tuesday, and we're going to finish up the conversation we had. We ran out of time talking to him. Some great information from Justin, who is one of our journalists at Anti-Media, and the editor-in-chief and founder of the Fifth Column News. Also, we'll be joined on the air shortly by our wonderful writer and journalist, Claire Burnish.
Yay! I miss Claire.
And she is also, for those who don't know, the editor-in-chief of the Pontiac Tribune.
A lot of editors-in-chiefs.
There are.
A lot of very knowledgeable people tonight.
There are. So stick around for that. You're going to hear some people far, far, far smarter than me.
And me.
To bring the truth. I guess while we're on the election, let's talk about this person for a second, because I can't mention the election without mentioning Marco Rubio. He is the one that we have kind of were fearful of and predicted that this is the guy the establishment's going to push through. He's younger. He
mounting evidence of that.
It would appear that it seems, you know, the more time goes by, this is what we have in store for us. So, you know, keep an eye out for that, because that's huge. I mean, we're talking about a guy who had the worst attendance record in Congress. We're talking about a guy who's taking money from private prisons to help fund him. We're talking about a guy who's basically, I won't say completely endorsed, but he's all but been officially endorsed by Dick Cheney. If that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about the man, you know, what else is there? There will be some bombs dropped if Marco Rubio does become the president of the United States. And that really terrifies me. I don't even think they're doing a good job of hiding what's going on. All right, let's go ahead and start taking a few calls. Area code 806. Welcome to Anti-Media Radio. I'm your host, S.M. Gibson. What is your name and where are you calling from this evening?
Hello.
806.
You are fired.
Yep, pulling a Trump. So, yeah, you know, I urge everyone to go out there and do their own research. I know everybody has various opinions about, you know, how things work. And we've talked at length about the whole process of voter fraud and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, leaders are selected. They're not elected. And these are the people that are willing to do what they have to do to get there. I mean, you know, we have the perfect example with Barack Obama, who, you know, promised hope and change, and Guantanamo is going to be closed, and everything's going to be great. Give him a Nobel Peace Prize out of the gate, and what did we get? We didn't get any of that. We didn't literally get any of that. We, you know, it was another politician. You know, and there's people that look at Trump that way. There's people who look at Bernie Sanders that way. There's people that feel like, well, this is going to be our savior. And I believe if you are a part of the Republican or Democratic parties, those parties aren't going to let anybody real get through to begin with.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, that's part of the illusion. So right now, as promised, we are joined on the air by Miss Claire Burnish. Claire, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
Doing fantastic. So, we didn't get to talk to you. Did we talk to you on Tuesday?
No, because she was in California.
Nope.
Having
oh,
fun.
That's right. Okay, see, I don't keep up with anything.
Hey, Miss Claire.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful.
Good.
How do you like that Detroit airport?
Well, I got really sick when I was on my trip out to California. So trekking through the Detroit airport that makes absolutely no earthly sense when I have now bronchitis was not fun.
That's no fun without bronchitis. Not hating on the city of Detroit. love my people. I got family.
I like Detroit. I like Detroit. I'm a fan.
The airport, not so much. Not a fan. That you can do better. You can make better use of that space.
Yes. And I will say for the record, it was pretty interesting because I didn't have anything, you know, obviously contraband or anything else on me, but each time, and this is my first experience flying since 9/11, each time that I went through the TSA checkpoints, tested my hands for, you know, probably residue of something.
Yeah, they do that now. It's all part of the police state. Welcome to it, fascism. It's great. So, a story that we definitely wanted to talk to you about on Tuesday, as far as the Marine, give everybody a quick rundown of that real quick
okay.
What that's about.
Sure. Okay. So in Afghanistan, we are trying to stick to their cultural norms because we want to be able to train some fighters against the Taliban, or at least we have in the past, and we kind of maintain that stance. But in order to do that and maintain the cultural norms, quote-unquote, in this area, we're basically excusing this localized practice or regional practice where orphan boys are kidnapped and that local village parents are approached to have their sons purchased by these, like, wealthy businessmen and military commanders of these people that we're training. And these children as young as 11 years old are dressed in, like, women's clothes, and they dance supposedly for these leaders, and then they are sexually abused. And we are basically turning a blind eye to this in the interest of keeping this the Taliban out of power. So this one Marine just got to the point where he couldn't tolerate it anymore, and he kind of attacked, more or less beat up a person who was participating in this.
Which was an admirable thing to do, to beat somebody's head in for that.
Yep.
Yeah, he just couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't handle, like, having to try to keep this under wraps, and he'd had enough. And he heard that this person had kept a child basically chained to his bed, and so he attacked the guy. And then he was forced into retirement by the service. So
let me ask you this. I'll let you answer this. What happened to the guy that supposedly had the child chained to the bed? What was his punishment?
Oh, nothing.
And yet the Marine was forced to retire.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. What are we?
It is.
What are we doing here? Like, what is that even about?
It's just keeping the Taliban out of power. But you know, it's like in every country, it seems that we're interfering in. We're excusing all sorts of just absolutely appalling and abhorrent behavior, and you know, we do that with Saudi Arabia with beheadings, and we just are in cahoots with all sorts of undesirable characters because of our totally disintegrating and insane military policies.
I mean, Saudi Arabia's about to literally crucify a guy.
Yes.
Crucify a guy. Like, that's what we're dealing with. But Iran says death to America, and, you know, we have to go bomb them immediately. We have every single politician saying we need to go bomb them. We, you know, we can't let them get a bomb, this, that, and the other. What's going to happen? Nothing's going to happen. Nothing.
Nothing's going to happen. No. I mean, Saudi Arabia beheads people. They're going to crucify somebody who basically all they did was participate in protesting against the government. They are lashing a journalist. I mean, there's, you know, this is our staunchest ally in the Middle East.
Yeah, and people don't realize that what close ties we have to that country. But it's that way with everything. As long as the regimes over there play ball, we let them do whatever they want. If they don't cooperate, then they're all of a sudden this huge threat, and we have to overthrow them. There's a perfect example right now is in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Just for all the Zombernies calling in, hold your horses. We're trying to talk some real news here, and I'm not real concerned about you got butt hurt over a meme. So it'll be all good. All right, Claire, there is also another story that just happened in your now former hometown of Cincinnati.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
There was a March for Unity, and this was a really beautiful march in Cincinnati, and it was an anti-police brutality action, but it was basically a community march, and people came from all over the place to participate, and everything was fine, and it was going peacefully, and they, you know, they went to their destination and had made their way back, and when they got into the business district, and keep in mind, the families of Sam DuBose, who, of course, was the victim of UC cops, the family of Tamir Rice, and the family of John Crawford were all there, or Samantha Ramsey and John Crawford, they were all there. So all of these, you know, families who've been through all this brutality and have had to deal with all sorts of tragedy and publicity that they've never wanted and all this, they were all there participating in this peaceful march together, which was wonderful. And then the cops started harassing the protesters when they got to the business district. So somebody did something that probably many of us have done at a protest before. He just kind of naturally flipped off a cop. And I guess the cop couldn't handle that, so he sped forward and jumped out, and another car pulled up, and they tasered him.
So he got his feelings hurt.
Well, now, wait a minute. He flipping off a cop is illegal, right? No, I don't think it is.
I think in...
It depends on what state. Now, I know...
A police state it is.
I know for a fact that it's definitely not a crime in Cincinnati. Of course, Ms. Claire could probably clarify that if I'm wrong.
It seems like it's becoming a typical thing to have an anti-police brutality march that ends in police brutality.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting how that works. And I mean, the guy was arrested and everything else. I'm going to have an article coming out about it, because really, you know, there's a lot of focus on this attack by the police, but the bigger picture was that this beautiful march, you know, everybody coming together for one cause, was fine without a single hitch until the police provoked it. So.
Oh, no, they're there to keep everybody safe.
Yeah, like in Ferguson. Remember how... Oh, wait a minute, that didn't go down.
Yeah, I felt completely safe in Ferguson. You're absolutely right.
<Mm-mm-mm>.
So, yes.
You know, when is this going to stop? I mean, really, when is it... At what point will this stop? I mean, what needs to happen to make this go away?
Well, I mean, we've had just about... It seems like it's just getting worse, and, you know, there's some argument that it's because there's so many people with cell phone cameras now and things like that, but I would say that it's much worse anyway. The brutality is becoming more blatant, more flagrant, and there is less and less accountability.
You know, I don't know. Is it just the fact that there is, like you just stated, the fact that everybody pretty much has a video camera in their pocket at any given point in time? The fact that it's always been going on, and now we're just finally getting to see it?
Well, there's certainly that. I mean, that's certainly a part of it. But that, I don't think that's all of it. I mean, it seems more and more blatant. I don't think people are just, you know, suddenly noticing it and filming it. I think that's part of it, but it's not the entire picture. It's getting worse. I mean, it's definitely getting worse.
It's much more purposeful. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And again, we've seen so many cases of cops with body cameras, with microphones. They all have an off switch. Now, why on earth you would have an off switch, you know, maybe if you go to a restroom or something like that, I could possibly understand. But, you know, especially with all of the, because, you know, taxpayers are paying, God, untold millions every year in these brutality cases against these, the few brutality cases that actually do go through.
You know, I actually have something to say about that with the body cameras. I actually wrote something a very long time ago for the Pontiac Tribune that identified some of the problems with body cameras, because there's also an issue about privacy that hasn't really been considered, and that's why a lot of departments haven't instituted plans with body cams, like, mandatory. But some places, some locations, like Seattle, has a solution where their videos are somewhat redacted in that they're scrambled so you can't identify the people who are in the video, but the video automatically live uploads to YouTube. And it's a station that the citizens, you know, in that area can actually log on to YouTube and watch what the body cameras are revealing. So they get all of their footage that way. There are some other solutions around for the body cam issue where, you know, say an officer draws his weapon and the tape reacts where it will backtrack and record the previous 30 seconds before the officer drew his weapon, whether it's a taser or a gun or, you know, anything. There are some solutions out there, and they should be instituted, but I think departments just look at the privacy issue or look at the issue as it's, you know, too expensive or too extensive, and they don't realize there are solutions. So,
well, here in Birmingham, Alabama, which is a pretty, you know, and pops up in a lot of top 10 lists for a very violent city. Now, we both have lived in and around the Birmingham area for quite some time, and we know that most of that bad element is kind of corralled to one area of town. It's usually very high in illegal drug trade activity. But we recently here instituted the body cams for police officers, and strangely enough, I'm getting old and senile.
I bet your complaints went down and
80%. 80%.
Yeah, it was huge.
I mean, I mean, just overnight, 80% complaints went down of police brutality. Incidences of violent interaction between cops and citizens went down dramatically as well.
Yes, and that happens in almost every location that institutes a plan in some form or another. But in places where they're able to turn off their cameras themselves, where they have full autonomy about it, there are, you know, the complaints are lessened, but not by nearly as much. So... there is definitely validity to body cams. It's not obviously going to solve the issue, because we've seen plenty of body cameras where, you know, as in Sam DeBow's case, where it happens anyway. But it's at least a step in the right direction.
Right, and I think, you know, the important thing is it's something that's in the back of the officer's mind, knowing that what I'm about to do is being taped. So, you know, if it's like the case that we saw in Charleston, and you go try to plant evidence on some guy, which we know happens quite often in this country.
Or in Cincinnati, where you have a police officer kind of try to explain it to citizens and explain it to other cops and try to get a story right and work on this angle and work that angle and, you know, let's talk to the other officer on the scene and, well, you saw what he did and you know what I'm saying?
That's it. That's exactly it.
Exactly. But it's a step, and I think it's a valid step, and I think there needs to be, you know, some sort of federalized law about body cams. I just think that it's certainly better than nothing, and at this point we'll take almost anything we can get to try to get a handle on the problem.
I actually completely agree with that. You know, I it's rare for me to think that, you know, that a law is going to help fix things, because we've seen how laws have screwed up so many things. But we're talking about people that are there to protect us, and they're getting paid with our tax dollars. And while I do think the privacy issue is massively, massively, massively important, when there's people getting murdered and people aren't being held accountable for that, that is a huge problem, and there has to be something done to rein that in.
Well, and also, too, as a proactive measure, I don't understand why we don't have more police officers that are mentally and psychologically capable of doing the tough job that everybody says the police officers have. And police officers do have a very tough job and deal with some very, I mean, just nasty, nasty people all day long. It'll take a psychological toll on anybody, to be sure. And those people need to be pulled back and put on a desk somewhere or do something that doesn't put them in a situation.
I'm sure Walmart's hiring.
I'm sure they are. Door greeters, yeah. Door greeters make a killing.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. But this story I'm going to work on, and I have some information from people who are at the scene in Cincinnati where this happened, so...
Well, good deal. Well, everybody be on the lookout for that. That will probably go up in the morning on antimedia.org. So,
and I have one clarification to make as well. The person who attacked the pedophile was a Green Beret, not a Marine.
Oh, okay.
So I just wanted to say that for clarity's sake.
Fair enough. I knew a Green Beret. He was crazy. He was crazy before he went into the Army. Yeah. But thank you so much, Claire. And everybody, be on the lookout for that, and we'll be talking to you soon, man.
Definitely. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
You too.
Night, Miss Claire.
Bye.
So, we're not ignoring your calls here. We will definitely be trying to get to some of them later in the show. The phone lines have been blowing up pretty good so far tonight.
Let's take a call. Let's jump into one.
All right, that's area code 770. Welcome to Anti Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey there, Mr. Gibson. My name is Robert Ashton. I'm calling from a little bitty town in Covington, Georgia. Or a little bitty town called Covington, Georgia.
Fantastic. Not too far away from us over here now.
Roll Tide.
Not too far. But I got to ask one thing. That recent post you guys put up there, how much hate mail and angry phone calls have y'all gotten from all that?
We have the phone lines have been blowing up. It appears that there have been some people that probably aren't very happy about that post. You know, it's not really...
Those are people that don't really know who Bernie Sanders is.
Really, it's not even about, to me, yeah. It's more about the mentality that people get in this country, and they get swept away by thinking that, okay, well, this politician is going to offer us hope, whoever the politician is. You know
what? That's exactly what I was just about to say, because I was reading some of the comments on Facebook, and there's a whole lot of hate. All kinds of people just cussing you guys out, saying you're left-wing liberals or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, the dude didn't even say he was Democratic or Republican.
Right. Like... and to me, you know, it's really, again, it's not so much to do with any one individual candidate. It's just, are people going to allow them to get, you know, swept up with their emotions again? We've done this before, and this is what we're dealing with. So why repeat the exact same cycle?
It's a funny little experiment. See, I always knew that people in politics who had strong political beliefs were extremely biased. And this post right here just straight up proves just how stupid people are. They don't even realize it.
Ding.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and they let their, like, they think with their emotions, and that's it. And if somebody contradicts, you know, how they feel, then, you know, you're automatically wrong, you're automatically this, and it just becomes this huge judgmental battle, and really all logic goes out the window, and they don't think about that we literally did this in 2008. We did it. Like, everybody was like, hope and change, everything's going to be great, oh, the Bushes are gone, it's going to be wonderful.
How'd that hope and change work out for you?
Right, he's bombed 7 different countries. What are we doing?
Yeah, I just think it's interesting. We need more things like this to get out there in the media, just to show people just how stupid they're being. Like, they're basically throwing all logic out the window and letting emotion completely control their lives. And that's, I mean, you can see where that's going to lead us.
Oh, absolutely. That's where we're at right now. I mean, you can say that for what's happened with Donald Trump. Thank you so much for the call tonight. Absolutely great point. And thank you for paying attention and being awake to what's going on here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, as promised, I said we were going to finish our wonderful phone call conversation that we had on Tuesday with the esteemed Justin King. Justin, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
Oh, I can't complain. So what's going on in your world this evening?
Not a whole lot, actually. I'm kind of a down night for me. Just kind of relaxing.
Well, nothing wrong with that. I actually saw a couple of news stories since we talked on Tuesday about how I believe it's something to the effect of John Kerry and the United States wanting to basically do what we were talking about as far as engage Russia in Syria. And, you know, your point was, if that happens, they're starting World War III.
Right.
Do you believe there's any validity to that? Like, do you really think that John Kerry or the Department of Defense or whoever is like, yeah, let's engage Russia over here?
No, I think it's posturing. I think they realized that Russia called their bluff, but I think they realized it a little too late. And now they're, you know, trying to regain some of their, I guess, street cred to make it seem like they didn't back down. But the fact is, their troops are on the ground there. Russian troops are on the ground there. I mean, that's at the end of the day, it was brinksmanship. We lost, you know, our administration lost, thank God. That's basically the way it is. Nobody in their right mind thinks it's a good idea to engage Russia.
Well, here's the thing. I think what you said is correct. Anyone in their right mind, but what scares me is what happens in 2016, or the people in charge now. These people aren't in their right mind.
Right. That's true.
You know, that's
look at this whole new batch we have coming up. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's not enough to terrify any sensible person. I don't know what it is.
I mean, truly. And if, you know, the whole Rubio prediction's true, I mean, I'm learning to, you know, speak French and moving to Quebec. I'll deal with Harper.
Yeah, no, it would. It would. Any engagement there where we actually engage Russian troops, it's not like, you know, the leaders of the two countries are going to sit down and say, okay, we're just going to fight in Syria. No, immediately it would be Ukraine would go live. There would be a whole bunch of small engagements that would blow up really quick. I mean, if this happens, Eastern Europe, all of those allies that we worked so hard to get, they're going to get overrun because we can't stop Russian infantry in Eastern Europe. We don't have the resources there. Even if we wanted to, we couldn't. They could just move right through. And so we'd lose them. I mean, it would would be the crowning screw-up in a whole line of foreign policy screw-ups for this administration.
I mean, it would definitely be the icing on the cake because, I mean, it would, you know, it would be worse than maybe Iraq and Vietnam put together if you go in and engage in Russia. Like that's,
oh, yeah. I mean, we're not even getting into the human loss of life because that's going to be in the hundreds of thousands, mm-hmm. if not millions. So, yeah, that's, I mean, we're just talking about from a political standpoint, it's idiotic. From a military standpoint, the loss of life from combatants, we're not even talking about the civilian loss of life that always accompanies that, would hit hundreds of thousands.
So you definitely know more on this topic than I do. As far as what's going on in Eastern Europe right now, what do we actually have on the ground, especially with Ukraine, because, do we have actual military troops? But there's definitely contractors on the ground, and you know better about that than anyone.
Right.
What is our presence like? Is it extremely covert?
Yeah, we have a lot of contractors, and most of those contractors are through alphabet soup companies. They're CIA contractors, they're DIA contractors, they're, you know, DOD contractors, but not linked through the Army, you know, even State Department, you know, all of these guys have their own little private armies in Ukraine. However, and this is a big thing, these guys are contractors that signed up to provide security, to maybe conduct some dirty stuff. These guys are not going to go toe-to-toe with, you know, a T-90 tank. If the Russians move in, they're going to run. I mean, I've been that guy. I can tell you right now, the mission changed that much. I'm gone. You know, you'd be able to see the flames from my path on a satellite. I'd be gone, like Roadrunner.
So what we have there basically on the ground now is nothing to do with engaging in an actual combat as much as it is to carry out specific missions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We've got some troops that are there, some training cadres that are there to train troops in, you know, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, stuff like that. But then we're relying on, you know, the Polish army to actually do the fighting. Our troops are mostly in Germany. You know, we have some scattered throughout Eastern Europe, but most of them are currently in Germany. And, you know, there was a German commander that once said, I'd rather have, you know, five American divisions in front of me than one Polish division behind me. They're not the best allies. So I don't know that, I don't know how much faith we could put in their armored divisions, their tanks standing up to Soviet, their Russian tanks. Yeah, I mean, it's a replay of the Cold War. They're not allies that we can really depend on.
You know, and Putin's definitely not a guy that you know, by his track record, that's going to be backing down from anybody.
No, and in all honesty, I think what this is, from his perspective, I think that he might be setting up in hopes of there being a wise president in 2016 that would be willing to kind of trade Ukraine for Syria or Syria for Ukraine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll withdraw from here, you withdraw from there, type of thing.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, he was a cold warrior, and that's how we played the game back then.
It's like playing Risk, but for real.
Right. And if we get an idiot in charge, which definitely seems likely, he's just going to keep them both. Like, you know, I mean, there's no reason not to.
Do you see anybody on the table that would actually play the game with Putin, or you think they would just go in guns drawn?
I honestly, as much as I despise the man, I think that there's a possibility that because he's so insane and unpredictable, that I think Putin might actually be a little leery of Trump if he had a good advisor. You know, he's not going to be leery of Trump by himself, but if he had good advisors under him, and there, you know, just because he's nuts, I mean, you don't know what he's going to do. And that's one of the things, you know, professional soldiers are predictable, but the world's full of amateurs. Amateurs are the most lethal, you know, because you have no clue what they're going to do. And that would be something that Putin would weigh, because you don't know if he's just going to say, screw it, we're going to war, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's very, very, very likely. And then, you know, it may not be. Who knows? Because he's so, you know, it seems very off the cuff and doesn't really get a grasp of what's going on. He's just making it up as he goes, and I think that's what he would do as president.
Right, and I think given who has his ear, as far as, you know, him being from the billionaire set, I think he'd probably very happily give Russia Syria in exchange for Ukraine, because our boy Soros has billions invested, and I think Ukraine would be the priority under Trump.
I could actually see that. Yeah, I mean, I think as far as anybody else, I don't really see anybody else trying to make a deal with him too much. You know, maybe a Bernie Sanders, maybe a Rand Paul. You know, that's hard to say, but all the rest of them, whatever.
I think Rand Paul could package it as part of his program to disengage from all of it. I think he might be like, I mean, we'd walk, you know, from all of it as part of his campaign, you know, as part of his plan. So it doesn't look like he's losing faith. Sanders, I don't know. I know there's a lot of your listeners like him.
Yes, we're definitely experiencing an overwhelming amount of phone calls right now to prove such a
thing. A lot of Bernie love tonight. A whole lot of Bernie love.
The Zombernies.
Doesn't seem that up to speed on foreign policy.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, and I think that he would probably, because of his ties with Israel, I think that he would probably be leaning more to defending Syria. And I think that because of his ties and what he's already said, I think that might lead him to make some errors in judgment.
Yeah,
because, you know, it's war. You can't really get emotional, especially if you're at the top. And I think that in this case, a lot of his politicking is emotion based. So I think that he would stick with that, which is, you can't make people feel good with war. You know, it's not a good thing. However, he's sticking by Israel, which that's a foreign policy mistake that every president for the last 30 years has made.
And they're definitely, he's being packaged to me very similar to Jeremy Corbyn in the UK, who just became the Labour leader over there, what, 2 weeks ago or something? But yeah, They're massively different on foreign policy. Corbyn is definitely, doesn't at least appear that he's going to bat with Israel. I mean, he even came out and said that the U.S. and the U.K. were, partially responsible for ISIS. That didn't make a lot of people happy. I could never see, Bernie really stepping up to the plate like that.
No, I don't. I don't see any U.S. president doing that, because there's, In the foreign policy world, the UK is America's largest aircraft carrier. You know, it's not, our decisions are so intertwined that they tend to let us take the lead. So it doesn't matter what their leaders say too much, except for the prime minister. And
he's having sex with pigs, so.
Why? And he's got a whole different set of issues to worry about right now. Yes, I'm not. I don't see any players on the field, you know, in our election that are going to be able to go toe to toe with Putin. He's too sharp. I mean, he is a very intelligent man, and what's scarier is that he has even smarter people as advisors.
I mean, no matter what you think about Vladimir Putin, I mean, I don't think anybody that's, you know, being honest with themselves cannot agree with what you just said. I mean, the guy is very smart. You know, it doesn't make him the world's most wonderful human being, but he's very intelligent and knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. No, I mean, he just has a horrible human rights record. He's not a great leader, like, as far as he's not going to go down in history as, you know, somebody that was great for his people. But he is going to go down in history as somebody that secured Russia after the Cold War.
And I think,
you know,
you've got
to think that prior to him, that Russia was a joke. And now we're backing down from them. And just a few terms as president and prime minister, however he rigged the constitution over there. He's turned that country around.
Yeah, I mean, they had Boris Yeltsin, and, you know, they were an absolute, like, it was laughable. Like, he was just, you know, considered, you know, the world's funniest drunk. And, you know, now we've got some KGB guy that, you know, that isn't screwing around. And I think, too, when it comes to just politicking, I think, you know, his greatest move on the chessboard so far has been with Snowden, at least internationally, because it's like, oh, look what I did. Even though everybody knows what it's about, everybody knows what he's doing. It's like, we're taking care. You know, we abhor what the U.S. is doing, spying on people. Meanwhile, he's doing the exact same thing. He's just playing the card that's dealt with to him.
Right, and he's great in that regard. Like, I mean, it's great PR. It's good old-fashioned Cold War, you know. We're protecting your dissident. You know, it's wonderful. And then the other thing that he's doing, and the best part is, if you ever heard him talk about it, this is what I mean by smarter advisors than him, he knows that he doesn't have a clue what's going on, but they're setting up the Eurasian Economic Community, or Eurasian Economic Union. They're backing China's competitor to the World Bank and the IMF. They're doing a lot of economic chessboard pieces that are very dangerous to U.S., to the way we've done things since the end of World War II. You know, the World Bank and the IMF, that's how we control third world countries. That's how we keep them in line. There's never been a competitor. And now the Russians and the Chinese are making that competitor. And that's going to be a big issue.
But, you know, I think a lot of intervention over the past, you know, two decades, a lot of people, and of course, you know, resources are involved, but I think it does go back to the currency and the banking. You know, Gaddafi being the perfect example to me, even Saddam Hussein, really. You know, what was it? He implemented the euro in, what, 2000?
Mm-hmm.
To trade oil in, and what, he had about 16 months left to live or something crazy, whatever he did.
Yeah, the central banking system and the, you know, the Brookings institutions, all of that is tied together, and this is how we can maintain a lot of these third world countries and keep them in debt to us. Because what we do is we loan them money at loan shark interest rates that we know that they can never pay back. And then when they can't pay it back, we say, oh, you know how you can revitalize your country? Let's let Nike build a factory here and pay your workers 15 cents an hour. And I mean, if you ever look into it, it is the most corrupt, nasty, horrible thing.
Oh,
That
sounds like conspiracy, Justin. That just sounds
like... Tinfoil hat. Get out your tinfoil hats, everybody.
Yeah, that's just...
Yeah.
It's about freedom. Yeah. They're just freeing people. That's it. They're just giving people
freedom.
Y'all
know me. Yeah. All about those conspiracy theories.
I saw a picture with you wearing a tinfoil hat one time, so there.
Well, yeah, that's true. I couldn't debunk a conspiracy theory when I had to wear a tinfoil hat. That happened.
for everyone out there that's not familiar with Justin King's work, he is the king of going after conspiracy theories and debunking them. And I think it was, what, one time you couldn't debunk one that had to do with the rise of ISIS and, you know, the United States being behind it. Am I remembering that correct? Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. And I was like, there's no way. That's not true. We wouldn't be that stupid. And I was wrong. We are that stupid.
So, yeah, there you go. The one conspiracy out there that's true is ISIS. Well done, United States. Congratulations. So, changing topics a little bit, but staying in the Middle East, do you think Saudi Arabia is going to back down from crucifying this kid? Because there's definitely a bunch of pressure right now, and especially being appointed to the head of the UN Human Rights. What a joke that is. Do you think they'll try to posture themselves to, you know, not look like complete monsters here?
I don't know. I mean, these guys, you know, they've got Raif Badawi that they're giving 1,000 lashes to amid an insane amount of international pressure. I mean, and I do think they're going to kill this guy. if they're just going to behead him. You know,
I think that will be their compromise. It's like, okay, we're not going to crucify the guy. We're just going to behead him. I completely agree. I mean, Saudi Arabia has not shown any good faith as far as not killing people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty horrible regime. It really is. You know, our great allies.
That's
you
it. Know,
they just had one of their diplomats get busted in India for having sex slaves.
Yeah, tell everybody a little bit about that. I mean, when you're getting busted in India for rape, then there's an issue going on.
Right. This is the country that doesn't really seem to take that very seriously. Basically, one of their diplomats had some, I think they were from Nepal, some migrant workers that they were using, they hired as maids, and then just kept them chained up and did all kinds of stuff that we probably can't talk about on the radio to them. And then they got busted. And of course, the guy's got diplomatic immunity. I mean, it's like a Lethal Weapon movie. It's that horrible.
These are our allies. These are the people we consider our friends. It's just like, oh, whatever, they do what they want. We're all, you know, holding hands, walking through Crawford, Texas, whistling, kissing each other on the mouth. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
These are the people running the world.
Yeah, for those people that still think we have the moral upper hand, we don't. The U.S. has lost its complete sense of morality. I mean,
Didn't you see the Pope today speaking in Congress? They tried to gain some points back on that one. I still think that's just the most bizarre thing in the world to me. The way everybody's fawning over him.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I mean, I get that this guy is making some huge changes in the Catholic Church. You know, I get that. And you know, well, he probably doesn't need me to say, you know, God bless him for it. But I mean, he's still representing an institution that is generally not been a good thing, you know. There's a lot that he could do with the stroke of a pen that hasn't been done. So I don't know how much credibility I want to give the guy.
Well, you know, it's no secret that I'm a Christian. I don't get it. Like, I don't get why everybody's just like, oh, it's just a guy. I mean, I understand, like, he represents this huge, huge, huge institution. He's just another man, you know. Sorry to hurt everybody's feelings on that, but, you know, he's a guy like me or you sitting here.
Just with a lot more money.
With a lot more money. And, you know, I don't know personally if he's, you know, if he's genuine, if he's good at PR, but to me it's more fascinating to me to watch everybody in Washington just, you know, completely fall at the guy's feet. And even more bizarrely, do you believe if we had a Republican president right now, maybe I'm wrong about this, that him speaking at Congress, people wouldn't be screaming at the top of their heads, separation of church and state? Because even I'm like, what's going on here? Why is he speaking in front of Congress?
No, I don't know. I mean, But see, I don't really follow the religious debates that much, because like, when it comes to that, if they wanted to invite the Pope or the Dalai Lama or whatever, I don't really care, you know.
It doesn't
bother me. I could see where certain people might have issues with that, and it probably isn't what was intended. But for this guy to come in and make a plea to Congress, fine, you know, whatever. We've had crazier people speak to Congress. You know, I prefer the Pope to Netanyahu. So
I completely agree with that. You know, the Pope, for whatever he is, isn't actively bombing people.
Right. I mean,
I like this Pope. This Pope has been a kind word.
He's definitely a different kind of Pope.
Yeah, he's definitely reforming the Catholic Church. Like, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that he's done has made the Catholic Church, you know, people, it's weird to think of them as liberal, but they're becoming more liberal than they were. But that's, you know, it's just different shades of black. They're still a very traditional organization, very conservative organization. But I think the real question is, he's great at the PR, and yes, he is. And he feeds the homeless, and he eats with the homeless, and, you know, all of this stuff. I'm waiting for the Catholic Church's policies to start reflecting that. And if they do, he will get the most praise in the world from me.
Right.
But until the rest of the church matches his example, to me, it's just window dressing.
Right. And, you know, that's going to be with everything. It's just, like, you know, we could elect, you know, the greatest president that we've ever had, and yet all of Congress is still going to be corrupt, so what's really going to change? And that's kind of similar to me with the Catholic Church. You know, there's still going to be a lot of corrupt people involved in the inner workings of everything, even if the Pope is the greatest guy in the world. And you know, I don't have a problem with the Pope one way or another. It's just, he's just, you know, he's just a person. It is what it is. Like I said earlier, it's just fascinating to me the way all the politicians have just gravitated towards him. John Kerry's out there on the tarmac. He's getting on the plane to go up to New York today. I mean, I think they're all just treating it as PR and, you know, a photo op.
Yeah, I think a lot, especially the Democrats, I think a lot of the Democrats see this moment to relive Camelot and relive Kennedy's, but it's just, it's not there. You know, I think they're trying to make that connection, which is a connection they've tried to make repeatedly with the current administration, and it's just not happening. For good reason. I mean, this guy's not Kennedy.
No. In fairness, though, I think we have relived a lot of Lyndon Johnson's policies, so they're kind of close.
Oh, man. Well, talking about swinging at the... Yeah, that's a good analogy, and that's very accurate.
But I tell you what, we've got just a couple minutes here left on the show. Thank you so much for calling in tonight, Justin. And everybody out there, pay attention definitely to his articles up on antimedia.org. And please, please, please go visit the Fifth Column News. Fantastic website, especially when it comes to foreign policy, and definitely reporting on stuff that, you know, not a lot of other people know what we're talking about. So if you want to get real news, definitely check out Justin King and Fifth Column. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you. All right, you have a good night.
You too. So, yeah, good show. Sorry we didn't get to all the plethora of calls. I know everybody's really upset. There's a meme. But we'll be back next week. Anti-Media Radio, SM Jensen.
I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.